New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit pdxgyp.com.
This program is made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Radio Cab, serving the metro area since 1946 with service 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Radio Cab offers airport service, wheelchair-accessible vans, and can be reached at 503-227-1212. In Vancouver at 360-694-1234 or RadioCab.net.
KABU Community Radio is proud to help co-sponsor the...
This KABU program is made possible...
Welcome to Out Loud, the queer culture radio show on KBOO. My name is Carla, and tonight we're going to be welcoming Max Voltage back to the show. And Max has been on the show a couple of times because they are a local event producer. And tonight we're going to be speaking with Max about their upcoming project called Ho Momentum the Musical. So we'll also be featuring a musical sample from that production after we speak with Max in just a few moments. And later in the show, we'll be playing some songs from The Cabin Project, which is another group that has been featured here on Out Loud in the past. And they are a group based here in Portland. So we'll hear some music from them. And then in the second half of the show, we'll be hearing This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian news magazine. Now, before we get to our guest this evening, I want to share a couple of community announcements with you. First, I'd like to let you know that the Siren Nation Festival is coming up this weekend here in Portland. For those that aren't familiar, Siren Nation is celebrating their 7th anniversary this year, and Siren Nation is a festival celebrating women in the arts. The celebration starts Thursday evening here in Portland. There's going to be an art show. There are going to be some music events happening Friday and Saturday night here in Portland at the Alberta Rose Theater. There's going to be a comedy show Sunday evening. And on Sunday, all day at the Kennedy School, there are going to be workshops as well as a craft fair. Now, Siren Nation also has movies that will be happening next weekend. And for all the details on these events, as well as the history, or should I say the herstory of Siren Nation, you can go to their website, sirennation.org. Now, I'd also like to let you know about something else that's coming up next week on Thursday, November 14th, here in Portland. The local organization that's called the History of Social Justice Organizing is presenting the Mountain Moving Cafe, Exploring Collectives at Work. Now, this is happening again Thursday, November 14th, starting at 7 p.m. at the Browsing Lounge, which is in 238 Smith Memorial Center down at Portland State University. And this free event is featuring four members of the original Moving Mountain Collective, Andy Clark, Ellen Goldberg, Kiera O'Hara, and Peter Thacker are all going to be part of the conversation this evening, again, next week on Thursday. And for those that aren't familiar, the Mountain Moving Cafe was a beloved institution in the 1970s here in Portland. But the evening next week is going to be more than nostalgia. The event will be an opportunity to talk about what it takes to make a collective work. Now, the Mountain Moving Collective Consciously Anti-Profit Cafe opened in 1975, offering Portland's earliest vegetarian menu and attracting both alternative and mainstream patrons. And again, the cafe was a catalyst for discussions and action among progressives and provided a much-loved community center for women and men, both gay and straight together, until the space closed in 1979. So again, the Mountain Moving Cafe, Exploring Collectives at Work, is happening next week, Thursday, November 14th, starting at 7 p.m. at the Browsing Lounge, located at 238 in the Smith Memorial Center down at Portland State University. For more information, your favorite search engine will help you find the History of Social Justice. That is the organization putting this event together. Now, in just a few moments, we're going to be welcoming Max Voltage to the show. And for those that aren't familiar, Max has been involved in the Portland arts community for many years, featuring a variety of different productions. And for more information, I want to let you know Max's website is pantsoffpdx.com. And I'd like to welcome Max Voltage back to Out Loud Radio. Max, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Thank you.
Fabulous. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Now, I'm excited to hear about where you are. You've been creating the musical Home Momentum. So give us an update on your musical.
Well, the script is done.
Yay.
You know, I mean, it's always a bit of a work in progress, but this is a finished product, basically, for this grant that I received. The Regional Art and Culture Council awarded me a project grant to fund the development of the piece itself, of, you know, getting it written and putting it on a stage for the first time. So this performance is the end product of that work.
How exciting. And it's folks can see your creation on Friday, November 15th, correct?
Yeah, we're actually having three performances.
Okay.
We're doing it Friday, November 15th, Saturday, November 16th, and we added a third show for November 17th, a Sunday matinee show. So the Friday and Saturday are evening shows, and the Sunday is a matinee.
Okay, and where is Home Momentum, the musical, going to be happening?
Yeah, it's at Coho Theater.
Okay.
Which is 2257 Northwest Raleigh Street.
Okay.
Yeah.
And for folks that have not seen your performances in the past, give us a little description of what can we expect when we see Home Momentum, the musical.
Yeah, well, it was inspired by the Home Momentum Cabaret series, which ran for three seasons. And that included a lot of camp and drag, dance, performance art, music, so glitter, of course.
Yep.
So all those components are in the musical as well. The musical just pulls a lot of those values as well as the aesthetics. In addition to that, the musical itself has a whole plot. There's about eight main characters, as well as a chorus, a boy band. So the piece itself is this complex sort of, it's a post-Earth dystopia. So it's definitely pulling in what the cabaret series had and going a lot further.
Wonderful. Yeah. So some science fiction, some fantasy, lots of gender bending.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. All these things.
Okay.
Unicorns. There's a whole race of mythical changeling creatures on this other world.
Right on. Okay.
Yeah.
And are you selling tickets ahead of time, or do people buy tickets at the door?
Yes, we'll do both, but there are limited amount of seats, so I really recommend people who can to buy in advance. And then we'll have at least a few available at the door for each performance as well.
Okay. Now, I just want to remind listeners, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Out Loud. This is the Queer Culture Radio Show on KBOO. My name is Carla, and we're speaking with Max Voltage about Ho Momentum, the musical. And the performances are next weekend, Friday, November 15th. The doors at 7, and then the show starts at 7:30. The same details are true for Saturday, November 16th. Again, the doors at 7, show starts at 7:30. And then on Sunday, the 17th, there's a matinee, doors at 1:30, and then the show starts at 2. And the Coho Theater is at 2257 Northwest Raleigh Street here in Portland. Now, where can folks get tickets ahead of time?
Yeah, they can just directly go to this web address. It's homomentum.brownpapertickets.com.
Okay, wonderful. And I did refer people to your other website, thepantsoffpdx.com. Mm-hmm. Just to let folks know, Max has done many other creative endeavors here in Portland. And I guess when you're done with your musical, I know you've been very, very busy with this creation, but
yeah.
Dare I ask, what do you have in store after this?
Well, I actually just got a new job.
Oh.
So I will be back in the working world.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm actually going to be working for Coho Theater.
Wonderful.
And doing work there as their new operations manager.
Fabulous.
And probably doing more work trying to get Home Into the Musical out there more in Portland as well as in the rest of the country as well, trying to find other theaters that want to produce it and other ways to get it out there. So that's the plan for now.
Okay.
And, maybe someday I'll have a TV series spinoff of the musical.
We can hope. If there's any TV producers that are listening, you can find Max online. Do you need volunteers, or do you need anything for the production next weekend?
We still have a couple volunteer positions. If people are interested in doing that, they can email Max at pantsoffpdx.com if they want to help usher or help with some load-in volunteer work during Tech Week, which is next week. So there's still some positions for those folks that want to volunteer or can't afford the ticket price. I always offer spots for folks to help out in exchange for getting to see the work.
Okay, that sounds great. And again, folks can email Max. The email address is max@pantsoffpdx.com.
Yep.
And now I want to ask, and I'll apologize, I'm not familiar with the Coho Theater, but is that a wheelchair accessible space?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it is. We have, basically, there's one great wheelchair seat per show, and then there's two that are kind of off to the side. So for any sort of accessibility needs, go ahead and email that same address, max@pantsoffpdx, and just let us know so we can make sure to reserve you a spot.
Okay.
And the other thing I wanted to make sure people know about is our Saturday night show is sign interpreted.
Oh, okay.
So I'm hoping to get that word out to that community as well. But we have a great team of sign interpreters who are really excited about the material. So I can't wait for the sign interpretation night as well. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Right on. Okay,
yeah.
So Saturday night we'll have the sign language interpretation. That's wonderful.
Yep.
Okay, well... are there any, we are, for listeners, I want to encourage you to stay tuned, because when we say goodbye to Max, we're going to hear a little musical sample from Max. But before we go to our music break, Max, are there any closing thoughts that you want to leave our listeners with?
Yeah, I'm just I just wanted to say I'm just so excited to share this with the community. It's been this dream inside my brain for the last year and a half, and I'm just so looking forward to next weekend and sharing it with all of you and getting you'll be able to see inside of my head finally. So, yeah, I really hope that people can make it and rally and come buy some tickets.
Okay, fabulous. Yeah.
Thanks for having me on the show, Carla.
Oh, yeah, you're so welcome. Thanks for all the wonderful art that you've been cranking out here in Portland for many, many, many years.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's what I do.
Yeah. Now, tell our listeners a little bit. We're going to hear your song titled The Show Must Go On, but is this song actually part of Home Momentum?
Yeah, this is a song I wrote. It is... basically kind of an introduction to the Home Momentum Players, who are this band of intergalactic performance artists who crash land on this world. And this song happens as sort of an introduction to them and their philosophy of performance.
Okay, right on. Well, thank you. Thank you for your creation and thank you for being our guest on the show tonight. And I look forward to enjoying your show and then whatever else you might create in the future. Keep up the great work, okay?
Thanks, Carla.
Right on, and thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And so, listeners, we're going to take a music break and hear from Max Voltage, and we'll be back with some more community announcements in just a few moments. But this song is titled The Show Must Go On.
Don't break the rhythm, strum, 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 even if notes are missed. Don't screw your face up when there's a mess up. Go with the new plot twist. The show must go on. Don't break the flow. The show must go on. Play it off and go. Costumes ragged, sets stained and jagged. Props are looking worn. But when seats are filling, art is spilling. Make up for all that is torn. The show must go on. Don't break the flow. The show must go on. Find your bravado. Wires cross-eyed, speakers beyond fried, lighting on the fritz. Mics misbehaving. The show must go on. Don't break the flow. The show must go on. Don't let the cracks show. Dancers tumble, actors will bumble, players forget the notes. One simple phrase to remind and amaze. Theatrical quote. The show must go on.
That song was titled The Show Must Go On from Max Voltage, a little musical sample of Max's upcoming production titled Home Momentum, the musical. And if you missed our conversation with Max, the details for the show, performance Friday, November 15th, doors at 7, the show starts at 7:30. Down at the Coho Theater, located at 2257 Northwest Raleigh Street here in Portland. The same details for Saturday, November 16th. Doors at 7, show at 7:30. And then Sunday, November 17th is a matinee. The doors are going to open at 1:30, and then the show starts at 2 p.m. again at the Coho Theater. For more information, you can go to the website, Pants Off pdx.com, or your favorite search engine can help you find Ho Momentum the Musical. And they are also on Facebook. So I'd like to share a couple more community announcements with you. There's a lot of great stuff going on here in Portland. There is a call for proposals for the Meaningful Care Conference. So proposals for workshop sessions at the 2014 Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender, and Queer Meaningful Care Conference are now being accepted. The conference is taking place here in Portland on Friday, March 28th. Again, this is next year, but the Meaningful Care Conference is looking for workshops on topics a wide range relating to health and the LGBTQ community. The deadline to apply is Monday, December 2nd. And you can find out more information. I apologize, I don't have a direct website, but if you do a search for Meaningful Care Conference here in Portland, I'm sure you can find it. Now, this day-long conference seeks to promote lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, and questioning cultural competency in healthcare and social services. The conference also seeks to share updated best practice applications of LGBTQ cultural competency in healthcare. And the conference also seeks to develop and diversify networks of LGBTQ culturally competent healthcare and social service providers. So attendees will include medical care, social service, and allied health providers, as well as city and county health officials, students, as well as a diverse array of community members. Now, again, the Meaningful Care Conference is seeking workshop proposals for the conference happening March of 2014. And you can find them. I apologize, I don't have a direct website, but your favorite search engine will help you find the Meaningful Care Conference here in Portland. And again, the deadline for proposal submission is Monday, December 2nd. And there are many other ways to get involved. If you're curious about the Meaningful Care Conference, they are looking for volunteers on a couple of the different committees that are helping to get that conference organized. Now, I'd also like to share something that's happening in India, which I find very exciting. There is a Q radio station that is breaking LGBT barriers in India. Now, a radio station based in Bangalore is dedicated to exploring gender fluidity and is making waves around India. The Q in Q Radio stands for queer, explains a station staffer in the YouTube video that is promoting the station. It is for the LGBT community. It's about giving the community space, a platform to celebrate or advocate or be an activist on anything that is close to them. Well, doesn't that sound familiar? Now, Q Radio is being distributed on the internet. You can find it at Radio Walla, so RadioWalla.in. And that website is the Q Radio station based in India. So, very exciting news happening in India. Now, next, we're going to take another musical break, and we'll be back in just a few moments. We're going to bring you a couple of songs from a group that has been featured here on Out Loud in the past. The Cabin Project is based here in Portland, and they released a new CD back in October. Their latest CD is titled Heliotrope. It is available for sale on iTunes. Their next show is actually up in Seattle, happening this week on Thursday, November 7th at the Columbia City Theater. And they'll be playing again here in Portland early next year. You can connect with the band on Facebook, or their website is titled thecabinproject.com. And we're going to take a musical break and hear their song titled Eastern Minds.
Through the ice of
That song was titled Eastern Minds from The Cabin Project, and you can find more of their music on iTunes if you'd like to purchase it, or if you'd like to find out more information about the band, The Cabin Project, you can connect with them on Facebook, or their website is thecabinproject.com. And if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Out Loud. This is the Queer Culture Radio Show on KBOO. My name is Carla, and I'd like to bring you an announcement. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Merrillhurst University, dedicated to helping adults revitalize their careers by offering 5 part-time MBAs, including the Green MBA in Sustainable Business and the MBA in Healthcare Management. Evening, weekend, and online classes allow students to keep days free for work and other commitments. Winter term starts January 6th. Now, we do need to wrap up Out Loud for this evening, and we are going to move into an international gay and lesbian news magazine. I'd like to remind you how to connect with Out Loud online. Our email address is outloudradio@gmail.com, and if you connect on Facebook or Twitter, you can find us at KBOO Out Loud at both Facebook and Twitter. Now, next week, we'll be bringing you another hour of Queer Culture Radio, like we do every Tuesday evening from 6 to 7 p.m. And if you'd like to find past radio shows from Out Loud, please go to the KBOO website, kboo.fm/outloud. I want to say thank you so much for listening. Stay tuned for This Way Out. And until next time, stay proud and live out loud.
Why in the world should someone in modern day America be allowed to be fired or have their employment in any way discriminated against because of their sexual orientation.
But several states today are refusing to issue these ID cards to same-sex spouses at National Guard facilities.
And you are? Alan?
Alan.
The question of how gay were the Beats, I mean, the truth is they were very open with how gay they were. I mean, there's lots of documentation and journal entries about Alan's experiences and the people he found beautiful.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Taiwan takes a look at marriage equality. The U.S. Senate and Defense Secretary each push for workplace fairness. And a Beat Poet mystery is dramatized in Kill Your Darlings. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Michelle Marie Gilkison.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending November 2nd, 2013. Marriage equality was part of a package of wide-ranging changes to Taiwan's civil code introduced this week in the Asian country's 112-member legislature. According to the Interpress Service, 23 members of the main opposition Democratic Progressive Party, or DPP, are sponsoring the measure. It was referred to the Judicial Affairs Committee on October 25th for review and a possible first reading. DPP lawmaker Yu Mei Nu told a news conference that most of the 82 proposed changes to the Civil Code section on marriage and the family involve changing husband and wife to spouse and father and mother to parents. Another DPP legislator, Cheng Li Chun, said that the government has an obligation to fulfill the constitutional and human rights of all people and not make such fulfillment contingent on public opinion. Even so, support for marriage equality in Taiwan has risen sharply in recent years. The latest poll showed a 53% majority in favor. The DPP failed to advance marriage equality bills in 2003 and 2006, blocked in both attempts by the majority right-wing Chinese Nationalist Party. That party is still in the legislative majority, however, so observers say prospects for passage of a marriage equality bill in Taiwan remain uncertain at best. The day before the measure was introduced, the colorful 11th annual LGBT Pride Festival in the capital city of Taipei attracted more than 50,000 celebrants, not only from Taiwan, but Japan, South Korea, and other countries in the region, arguably making it the biggest annual Pride event in Asia.
A lesbian couple and a gay couple were symbolically wed at a park in Hanoi as an estimated 300 Vietnamese LGBT people and their supporters rallied for marriage equality on October 27th. The large crowd of outdoor witnesses waved rainbow flags and released rainbow-colored balloons as the couple exchanged rings and threw their wedding bouquets. Lawmakers in Vietnam's National Assembly are scheduled to discuss relevant revisions to the country's marriage and family law in the coming week. Two government ministers have publicly supported allowing same-gender couples to marry, but Justice Minister Ha Hong Kwang has recommended a more incremental transition to equality as the best way to achieve reform. Despite a social conservatism that prevails in most Asian countries, Vietnamese LGBT rights activists have increased their public profile in recent years. Hundreds of rainbow flag-waving celebrants cycled through the center of Hanoi in August of last year in the country's first-ever Pride event. An online situation comedy called My Gay Best Friends went unexpectedly viral, attracting more than 1.5 million Vietnamese viewers. Lee Kwang Bin, one of the wedding organizers, told The Voice of America that before people thought it was sensitive, so they didn't want to talk about this. But now people are willing to talk. We believe that's necessary for social change.
But a second attempt to enact marriage equality in Tasmania failed this week in the Australian island state's Legislative Council. A motion by independent member Ruth Forrest to have the proposal debated for a second time in the upper house was defeated by a vote of 8-6. There was a bit of optimism that it might pass this time because several constitutional experts said it would not be in conflict with the Federal Marriage Act, which defines the institution as exclusively heterosexual. Venerable LGBT rights advocate Rodney Croom said that even though lawmakers' constitutional concerns had been addressed, they still voted against the bill, showing that in reality they just don't want to deal with this legislation. Save Marriage Coalition spokesman Guy Barnett called the rejection of marriage equality in Tasmania a victory for common sense. The upper house in the Australian state of New South Wales held its first debate on a marriage equality bill on October 31st, but postponed further discussion until November 14th. The federal government has gone to the nation's high court to challenge the latest version of marriage equality legislation enacted last month in the Australian Capital Territory.
In an unprecedented move, the Vatican has launched a worldwide survey on how parishes deal with such contentious social issues as birth control, divorce, and marriage equality. The poll was sent in mid-October to every country's National Conference of Bishops with a request from the Vatican coordinator, Archbishop Lorenzo Baldessari, to share it immediately as widely as possible to deaneries and parishes so that input from local sources can be received. Bishops in England have already posted the survey online to be filled out by a wide range of Catholics, including priests, laypeople, parents, and nuns. Critics of the U.S. National Conference of Bishops say that it's not encouraging such inclusive participation. A spokesperson for the conference's general secretary, Monsignor Ronnie Jenkins, said that it's up to individual bishops to decide how best to gather the information. The questions include whether civil marriage for same-gender couples is recognized in their country and how priests minister to those couples. It also asks how churches can respond when lesbians and gay men seek a religious education or Holy Communion for their children. There are also questions about the pastoral care of men and women who live together outside of marriage. The survey comes ahead of a major meeting on the family with the presidents of national bishops' conferences that Pope Francis has scheduled for October 2014. It will only be the third such extraordinary synod since they were reinstated in 1965 by Pope Paul VI. The survey also appears to reflect the current pope's pledge to move away from what he called a Vatican-centric approach toward one where local church leaders are more involved in decision-making, and he was widely quoted when asked recently about gay people of faith, "Who am I to judge?"
In other news, LGBT activists expressed disappointment that the newly installed president of the International Olympic Committee refused to meet with them while he was visiting the Russian seacoast city of Sochi, the site of the 2014 Winter Games. Thomas Bach told reporters that President Vladimir Putin assured him that Olympic athletes would feel comfortable regardless of sexual orientation. Nothing was said, however, about coaches or spectators. Putin's government has faced unrelenting worldwide criticism for enacting a bill in June that virtually outlaws any public demonstration of support for LGBT rights, including pride events. A statement by the Russian LGBT network said that some of its members had been invited to meet with Bach at the IOC headquarters in Lausanne. The date for such a meeting has yet to be announced.
Another group of LGBT Russians is planning a major sporting event this winter that they say will put a positive light on LGBT people despite the country's so-called no-promo-homo law. The New York Times reports that the Open Games will be held in Moscow 3 days after the Winter Games in Sochi in February. Athletes of any sexual orientation will be welcome to compete in 8 events, including basketball, badminton, and indoor soccer. Viktor Romanov of the Russian LGBT Sport Federation told Agence France-Presse that the event would simply be promoting sport and a healthy lifestyle, and as such, we aren't breaking the law, but added that we understand very well that with this difficult time that we are in, we can't stand aside.
Meanwhile, discredited American psychologist Paul Cameron testified in October before the lower house of the Russian parliament, or Duma, as an expert on homosexuality. Cameron was expelled from the American Psychological Association in 1983 for ethics violations and censured by the American Sociological Association 2 years later for consistently misrepresenting sociological research on sexuality, homosexuality, and lesbianism. The Southern Poverty Law Center classifies the Family Research Institute, founded by Cameron, as a one-man statistical chop shop that churns out hate literature masquerading as legitimate science. During his testimony before the Duma, Cameron cited his bogus research that 1 in 3 gay men has sex with children or wants to, and urged the Russian lawmakers to ban openly gay school teachers. Cameron's visit to Russia follows those of fellow travelers Brian Brown of the National Organization for Marriage and Tom Minery of Focus on the Family. Professional homophobe Scott Lively, who takes credit for inspiring the proposed Kill the Gays bill in Uganda, also visited Moscow recently to help plan a World Congress of Families conference in Russia next year.
But finally,
be prepared. That's the Boy Scouts marching song. Be prepared. As through life you march along.
Former U.S. Defense Secretary Robert Gates, who oversaw the dismantling of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, has been given a 2-year term to lead the Boy Scouts of America. Gates achieved Eagle Scout status during his scouting days, which is the group's highest honor. He's set to take the helm in May 2014 after being formally approved by the voting members of the Boy Scouts National Council. That will also be 5 months after the Scouts' revised policy regarding gay members goes into effect. The organization voted earlier this year to change its century-old ban on openly gay members, but only until they reach the age of 18. The ban remains in force for adult Scout leaders, employees, and volunteers. Given his history, the selection of Gates to lead the Scouts has given LGBT activists new hope that the group might eventually repeal its remaining membership ban on those who are 18 years or older. Just how prepared for change the Boy Scouts of America really is, however, remains to be seen.
Don't be nervous, don't be flustered, don't be scared, be prepared.
That's News Wrap for the week ending November 2nd, 2013. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and was produced this week by Wenzel Jones and Steve Pride.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. I'm Michelle Marie Gilbison.
And I'm Christopher Gall.
We've got a lot more in the wings this week, including the military, the royalty, and the literati. But first... There were big announcements from the U.S. Senate and from the Pentagon this week affecting different kinds of workplace equality. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid discussed his plans during an exclusive interview on October 30th with MSNBC's Rachel Maddow.
Right now, federal law prohibits discrimination in employment on the basis of race, color, sex, nationality, religion, disability, or age. The Employment Non-Discrimination Act would add sexual orientation and sexual identity to that long list of categories on which you cannot discriminate. All of the Democrats in the Senate support that non-discrimination bill. And 55 out of 100, do the math, is a clear majority. But Republicans are going to filibuster this bill, make it take 60 votes instead of 50. And so even though the Democrats have 55, they need 5 more votes. They need 5 Republicans to side with them on this thing if it's going to pass. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid says that he will bring this thing up for a vote, and soon. And I got a chance to ask him about his strategy on it.
You announced this week that you would, before this, the end of this work period, so before Thanksgiving, you'd bring the Employment Non-Discrimination Act to the floor, which is would be landmark gay rights legislation. It has languished for more than a decade, I think. It was big
Since
news.
Since 1997.
And you were an early supporter of it in the 90s.
Why in the world should someone in modern-day America be allowed to be fired or have their employment in any way discriminated against because of their sexual orientation? They shouldn't be. We are calling for fairness. And so I hope we can get this passed, and I feel comfortable we can do that. Every one of my Democrats support this legislation. And so I think without a lot of question, we're going to get at least 5 Republicans to pass this, send it to the House. If the House, again, has... any sense, and I hope they do, that they'll pick this up and pass it.
If Harry Reid is right, and this landmark non-discrimination bill is about to pass the Senate after decades of trying, then its next stop is the House, where cynics think John Boehner will never let it see the light of day, but where gay Republicans and their friends insist something surprising might happen this year. Lay your bets now.
True to his word, the day after his Rachel Maddow show appearance, Majority Leader Harry Reid formally announced that he would bring ENDA to the Senate floor on November 4th. It got enough votes in the chamber that day to overcome a Republican filibuster, so passage is all but certain. But if you're taking Rachel's advice and putting down a bet on ENDA's fate in the House, Speaker John Boehner has already announced his opposition, you may want to let something ride on Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel. He laid down the post-DOMA law on October 31st to several Republican-led states regarding the National Guard during his keynote speech at the Anti-Defamation League's Centennial Dinner.
When the Supreme Court issued its decision on the Defense of Marriage Act this summer, The Department of Defense immediately began working on providing same benefits to all eligible spouses, regardless of sexual orientation. We did it because everyone who serves our country in uniform, everyone in this country, should receive all the benefits they deserve and they've earned, and in accordance with the law. Everyone's rights must be protected. This means that all spouses of service members are entitled to DOD ID cards and the benefits that come with them. But several states today are refusing to issue these ID cards to same-sex spouses at National Guard facilities. Not only does this violate the state's obligations under federal law, but their actions have created hardship and inequality by forcing couples to travel long distances to federal military bases to obtain the ID cards they're entitled to. This is wrong. It causes division among our ranks, and it furthers prejudice, which DOD has fought to extinguish, as has the ADL. Today, I directed the Chief of the National Guard Bureau, General Frank Grass, to take immediate action to remedy this situation. At my direction, he will meet with the adjutants general from the states where these ID cards are being declined and denied. The adjutants general will be expected to comply with both lawful direction and DOD policy, in line with the practices of 45 other states and jurisdictions. Whether they are responding to natural disasters here at home, in their states, or fighting in Afghanistan, our National Guardsmen all wear the uniform of the United States of America. They are serving this country. They and their families are entitled to all the benefits and respect accorded to all of our military men and women.
While Indiana immediately capitulated to Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel's demand, Texas, Oklahoma, Georgia, Florida, Mississippi, Louisiana, South Carolina, and West Virginia remain resistant. If they don't comply, their National Guards could see funding cuts or even be brought under direct federal control.
I'm Kate Clinton, and while I can joke about the political state of our country, it's no laughing matter what Congress could do to our civil rights. An informed community is a strong community. That's why I'm inviting you to tune in to this station to hear This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine.
Ginsburg, Kerouac, and Burroughs follow this saga of a not-so-closeted British king.
King James I and his favorite, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. When King James I took power in England in 1603, Puritans pressured him to impose a strict biblical morality. To appease them, he stiffened penalties for sodomy. Not that he held himself to the same standard. In fact, he felt so secure in his perceived absolute divine right to rule that he was open about his passion for handsome blue-blood men. In 1614, he met a 22-year-old country boy named George Villiers and fell head over heels. While James was rather short and spindly, George was athletic and handsome, with curly chestnut hair and flashing dark blue eyes. It's no coincidence that he was named the Earl of Buckingham and quickly rose to Lord High Admiral. Meanwhile, George had another title, the most beautiful man in Europe. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Jed Proctor and Brian Burns at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Phil Pollard.
Another movie about the Beat Generation? This Way Out, Steve Fry discovered that there's still something to say.
A little-known story of that iconic literary group known as the Beats, involving homosexuality and murder, is finally explored in the ambitious new film, Kill Your Darlings. While attending Columbia University in 1944, the young Allen Ginsberg's life was turned upside down when he met his impossibly cool and handsome classmate, Lucien Carr, played in the film by Dane DeHaan. On the outside, looking in, was an older man, David Kammerer, played by Michael C. Hall, who was obsessed with a feckless and callow Carr. But it was an infatuation fated to end tragically. Former boy wizard Daniel Radcliffe brilliantly captures the timidly awakening genius and sexual confusion of an 18-year-old Allen Ginsberg.
Take this unbloomed stalwart.
And you are? Allen?
Allen.
Ain't nice, David.
Who comes uninvited to my apartment.
Actually, I invited him.
No one notices him. Look at him. Why would we bother? So the pattern of our lives holds. But who knows? Under the right circumstances, even he might change the world.
Hi, I'm John Krakitis, co-writer and director of Kill Your Darlings.
Hi, I'm Austin Bunn, co-writer of Kill Your Darlings.
Both Austin and I in Finding Ginsberg when we were both closeted meant the world to us. To find somebody who was so brave about his sexuality and about his loves and his politics. And he was just so brave as a person. You know, when I was in high school, and this was suburban Connecticut in the 90s, which is not the most conservative place in the States, somebody wrote an anonymous letter to the high school paper coming out and saying that they were gay. And the reaction in my high school was, who is the faggot? We're going to beat him up. So I was too scared to really open up about my sexuality until I was like, maybe one day I can get into college and run away from my hometown and become the person who I'm meant to be. So imagine reading Allen Ginsberg then, who in the time period that he came out,
Portland,
and
I
to write
to
so
not-
openly about his sexuality, that meant the world to me.
I just want to jump in there and say that the question of how gay were the Beats, I mean, the
this
truth is...
This is Judy Berry from Earth First, and when I'm in Portland, I listen to non-commercial community radio, KBOO, Portland. No compromise in defense of the truth.
How unashamed they were. It didn't even really matter. It was about trying to connect sexuality with your creative life that meant so much to us as young creative people. And that's the spirit we're trying to capture in the film, that those two things are linked. And I think many biopics that are more stuffy and staid try to divorce that quality of people's sexuality from their greatness. And this movie, we're just trying to link those two things to show that there is this life force that threads through these characters especially that ends up birthing these great artists. And it comes out of this mix of sexual experiences, creative talent, energy of friendship. That's what the spirit of the film is about.
According to the neophyte director, casting a role that included nudity and a gay sex scene is not the stumbling block that it once was.
Times have changed. They really have. What was shocking to me is when we first made our list of actors, it wasn't that asking actors to play a gay character wasn't a big deal. It was finding actors who hadn't just played a gay character that was a big deal. And the attitudes just towards sexuality in general, you know, the actors in this film playing the leads, their generation, they don't, it's there's no kind of history or issues or homophobia kind of wrapped up in that. They've just grown up with different attitudes, thankfully. And I think Daniel Radcliffe has been such a great ally to our community. And in the responses he's given, you know, he's like, I was an Equus. I had sex with a horse. That's shocking. Why are you asking me about a sex scene that I had with a man in a film? That is not shocking. Guess what, guys? Gay sex has been going on just as long in history as straight sex. I just want to applaud him for that.
So what do John Krakitis and Austin Bunn want the audience to take away from their film?
This film we made with a ton of admiration for these writers, but we did not want to make a traditional story of their greatness where in which it was given. We wanted to tell the story that the 18-year-olds inside us would have loved and appreciated and wanted the poster on the wall. And at the heart of that story is that this writer, Allen Ginsberg, whose work is so honest and transgressive and beautiful in so many ways, when he was 18 years old, he was wrapped up in a murder trial of a gay man, a known homosexual. And the idea that he would have been called to defend his friend, to help get him off for this case, seemed to me to laser into this contradiction in his character. How could this person I loved, who I thought was so open and so honest, also be involved in something where he was trying to protect a friend to help basically defend this defense as an honor slaying? So the film has these noir characteristics, but I think what John keeps reminding us is that the spirit of the film is much more energetic and rebellious, and it's the story of the birth of an experience as opposed to a greatest hits version.
What I really want audiences to take away from this is no matter how old you are, we all were 19 at some point. And we all wanted to do something important with our lives and authentic and unique and not be just who our parents wanted us to be, not just do what our teachers wanted us to do. And this movie captures that time period in these guys' lives. And after the movie ends, they went on to create the greatest countercultural revolution, you know, in America.
And maybe this is going to sound really obvious to anybody who knows his work, but he's an amazing writer of his journals, especially. Like the prose and the kind of first-person diary entries that you can read in his journals are just so vivid and compelling. The poetry is amazing too, but I had never thought about him kind of as a journalist of this period, and he really was. And I think we also came to understand that he's a flawed character. He's somebody who has this amazing gap between his ambition and his self-confidence and this really shy, kind of withdrawn young artist. Finding out that there was this kid inside him that was like felt kind of like he couldn't really fit in. We mostly know Alan as the spokesperson for beat culture and for the counterculture for the 20th century. But to realize inside him there was this very kind of nervous and shy and withdrawn person, that was a huge surprise.
But the biggest challenge in any independent film, even one with iconic producer Christine Vachon at the helm, is raising money. And according to Krikitas, on at least one occasion, the star power of a boy wizard was questioned.
I was actually told when I decided to cast Daniel Radcliffe in this movie by a few foreign salespeople that Daniel Radcliffe wasn't going to get his financing because Daniel Radcliffe could not open a movie without a wand in his hand. And I told them, he is playing Allen Ginsberg. There will be a wand in his hand by the end of this movie.
This has been a conversation with director, co-writer John Krikitas and his co-writer Austin Bunn about their debut feature film, Kill Your Darlings. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
You like my smile, you like my style, well, why don't you make me know it? You like my walk, you like my talk, well, there's only one way to show it. If you want to shake my hand, like they do it in Harlem, stick your hand right out and shout, give me some skin, my friend. Step right up and take your stand. You don't have to be timid. Stick your hand right out and shout, give me some skin, my friend. Smack it, whack it, let your hand rotate. Show it, blow it, put it in your pocket till a future date. If you want to shake my hand, like they do it in Harlem, stick your hand right out and shout, give me some skin, my friend.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Christopher Galt, Michelle Marie Gilkison, Jason Proctor, and Brian Burns with Phil Pollard and Steve Pride contributed program material. Tom Lehrer, Backman Turner Overdrive, and the Andrews Sisters performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is funded by the Ivana Foundation, the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, a bequest from the estate of Christopher David Prentham, and listener support. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org for links to our podcasts, blog, and Facebook page. You can also hear This Way Out on iTunes. Follow TWO Radio on Twitter, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on Fresh FM Nelson, New Zealand, KGUR Durango, Colorado, Trance FM Broward County, Florida, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station where we're all going to stay tuned.
KABU 90.7 FM Community Radio and the Clinton Street Theater are proud to present The Yes Men Fix the World. Thursday, November 14th at 7 p.m., KABU will be showing the 2009 indie classic film The Yes Men Fix the World. The Yes Men Fix the World is the true story of two political activists posing as executives of giant corporations. In their thrift store suits, they lie their way into big business conferences and pull off pranks. That's The Yes Men Fix the World, November 14th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm/yesmen2013.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Close Guantanamo, a public forum featuring the past president of Veterans for Peace, Elliot Adams, plus Portland's Guantanamo Solidarity Vigilers. Close Guantanamo is co-sponsored by VFP Chapter 72 and the Economic Justice Action and Peace Action Groups of the First Unitarian Church of Portland. Adams will discuss different messages about why we will be better off when Guantanamo is closed from various perspectives: Christian, Muslim, Jewish, those concerned about national security, and the fiscally minded. Close Guantanamo will be at the Elliott Chapel, First Unitarian Church of Portland, on 1011 Southwest 12th Avenue on November 7th from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. More information about this event can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is Judy Berry from Earth First, and when I'm in Portland, I listen to non-commercial community radio, KBOO, Portland. No compromise in defense of the truth.
One, two, three, four.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.